Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey friends, welcome to a special edition of the Tennis and Bagels podcast. As I'm sure you guys have all heard with the recent news, obviously this is unsurprisingly surprising, because obviously we have seen it coming for some time, but nothing can really prepare you for this moment. So I think to help break all of this down, and someone who's covered Federer throughout his last couple of decades as a player, and who's pretty well known, I would say, in generally in tennis media and in Swiss media, for sure, does a lot of great work with Roger, and spoken to him and spoken to several people around him. I thought it would be none better than to have on Simon Graf here. And Simon, this is an honor to have you here. So how's it been going the last couple of days?
Yeah, thanks for the invitation. Yeah, it's been pretty busy since they broke the announcement. They broke the news. We knew a few hours before, but not so many, like just a few hours. And I thought he might try to play the Laver Cup and then decide whether he's still fit enough with his knee. Of course, I've had a few sources that told me that he hasn't really been practicing too much in the last few months. And so I wrote the story during the US Open, which caused quite a stir with his fans. And I didn't really tweet it because I didn't want to cause any discomfort with his fans. But obviously, I think it was shared a little bit in English, and I got a lot of reactions. But I mean, I knew he was not going to come back and play another year, unfortunately, because he hasn't really been practicing the last few months. Just played a little bit of tennis lightly.
Yeah, of course. When we all heard the news that he was going to have to get surgery again following last year's Wimbledon, we were hopeful that he would be able to play Laver Cup and then Basel, and then have a sort of swan song in 2023. So I think the fact that he's not able to play Basel, I think that's really telling as to his body just saying no more. And I think that's pretty clear. Have you spoken to him at all during that sort of period, since Wimbledon, or any close people around him between last year's Wimbledon and now?
Yes, I've spoken to a few people that I don't want to mention around him, because everyone was really quiet, or had to be really quiet. And I've met Roger a few months ago when he opened up a playground in Switzerland that was financed by his foundation, and we just spoke about 10 minutes, and he was quite optimistic there. He said if everything works out, he would like to come back for 2023. And like, it was tough to say in which condition he was in. He was playing with the kids, running around, no problems at all. But it was tough to tell if he was if he would be able to play again on tour. But I think he had a setback after Wimbledon. That's what Severin Lüthi told me, his coach. So I think a few weeks after Wimbledon, it was quite obvious that he was not going to come back. So I've spoken to him, and he was in a really good mood. And I saw him a few times at my local tennis club, where he was playing with his girls and a few juniors. But he, I mean, of course, he can still hit the ball, but he didn't do a lot of running. So it was really tough to see. But you know, I just spoke to a friend of mine yesterday who was at a party where Roger was. That Roger was attending as well, and he said he was just extremely relaxed. And I think he's completely at peace with this decision. I think it was probably tough for him to kind of keep up the illusion that he could come back on the tour, even though he knew it was not going to happen. I think now that it's out, I think it's a good thing for him. And like also what Seba told me, like he said Roger is very relaxed, and he's like already his mind is somewhere else and not really thinking about his career, and he missed opportunities anymore. So I think he's in a happy place, and let's be honest, like he has a pretty good life. So not much to complain about.
Yeah, absolutely, and it's good to hear that he's in a great place. And obviously, it's such a legendary career. You know, there's so many moments. We all know the numbers, of course. It's, you know, but I think what stands out more about Roger is the impact. I don't think there's ever been another player. We might not see another player like Roger, you know, come around, because I think the way he beautifully blended everything together, it was just so fluid and neatly packaged when you watched him play. The way he took the ball so early, his, you know, the way he could hit all the spots on his serve, the liquid whip that he had on his forehand, and, you know, you could just go on and on. And it was just, you know, that artistry and elegance and making something look that's so difficult and, you know, takes hours and hours of training and dedication and hard work, but he made that look so efficiently easy with how well he moved and played the game and carried himself. So is there something, anything in particular that really stands out to you about his game that you'll always remember and take with you?
Well, to me, I think the most important thing is that he just loved to do what he did. You know, like he just wanted to play tennis. He was not a guy who really liked to practice a lot, like hitting forehands and backhands, cross court or long line for hours when he was a teenager. But he just wanted to play and be really good at playing the game. And because he is a perfectionist, I think he just accepted that he had to really put in the hours and really do all the practices and stuff. So, but I think the thing is, he just likes to play tennis. And I think it's a beautiful thing when you watch or when you see someone who really just loves what he does or what she does. Like, it doesn't have to be a tennis player. And Roger was made for him to play tennis. And that's what I really loved, of course. I mean, his game speaks for itself. I mean, there's nothing I can add to what you said with the forehand. He's kind of his variation and his creativity. It was just fun to watch. And I think he lives on in quite a few players. Now, I think, had he not come up, probably tennis would be quite a monotonous game, mm-hmm. I think. I think, like so many young players, hardly any player that doesn't say, well, Roger was my idol or I kind of looked up to him. And I think so many players just try to copy things from him, try to copy his playing style. And I mean, if you see Carlos Alcaraz with all the drop shots, serve and volley, the lobs, like the variation, even though he's like a power player, he tries to mix it up. And it kind of reminds me of the young Roger. I mean, when he was just trying to drop shot all the time in the second set of the US Open Finals, I was reminded of Roger just like having so many options and not really knowing which one to use. So I think in tennis it really helped develop the game, bring it to a new level and make it more interesting. I mean, if you just so many people that looked up to him and tried to copy certain things, like Stefanos Tsitsipas as well, so I think that on the court, I think that might be his legacy in the years to come.
Yeah, absolutely. And just taking it beyond his game, I feel like he always just had tremendous respect for the history of the game, and it just the joy with which he played. I feel like it really it made people happy just watching him, because he always, you know, with his optimistic outlook and the way he sort of carried himself, so relaxed, you know, doing you know, at the press conference, I'm sure you've been part of, you know, when he efficiently moves from, does like 3 or 4 different languages, interviews, and, you know, he really carries himself really well, like a true ambassador. And I think that's why we were so lucky to have him for so long.
Yeah, I think also at the press conference, I think for a long time he liked to do it, you know, like he liked the Q&A, and he liked to give some insights and talk about different things. I think at the end, maybe he got a little bit tired of that. Also, probably because he didn't really know where his body was at, and that he was stopped a few times by his body. But, I mean, he just embraced the whole journey. When I spoke to Paul Anacone a few years ago, he said, like, when he was with Pete, it was just like tennis and everything else he was trying to manage but didn't really like. Mm-hmm. Roger, being with Roger, for him, it was like being around a rock star, you know, like everyone screaming, and Roger just enjoyed it, or he didn't care, like it was not a distraction for him. I mean, his life must have been quite busy the last 20 years, and he just loved everything about it, you know. So I think that's probably his secret, that he just it was just at ease being Roger and playing tennis and handling everything else that comes with it.
Yeah, absolutely. He handled it all really well with grace and class. And, you know, you can... I think also another thing that I just loved about watching him is it didn't matter who he played, right? It could have been his biggest rival, Rafa. It could have been Djokovic. It could have been a world number 200. I just knew every time I watched him, there was always going to be one moment, you know, at least one point, where you were just going to witness some crazy, difficult highlight reel shot that only he could pull off. Only Roger Federer could do that one thing. And it just, you know, every time I went on the court, I tried to pull off these shots like him. And I just, eventually it came a time where I just gave up. I'm like, okay, I just have to wait for the opponent to miss, because I'm not Federer. I can't do this.
Yeah, I think even him trashing opponents 6-2, 6-1, 6-2 was a joy to watch, you know.
Yeah.
And with others, you were like, come on, let's wrap this up, please.
Yeah, that's basically what I thought as well. Like, you know, because Djokovic and Nadal are such greats of the game as well, I enjoy watching them a lot more when they're pushed. You know, when they're pushed to the absolute brink, and when someone can really sort of challenge them shot for shot. But Roger, I didn't feel like that. I felt like the first round, first week drubbings of majors were always a delight to watch, just because of the sheer shot making.
So agreed,
So yeah, for sure. And of course, do you just feel like at the end, age and time and just normal human body just sort of caught up to him? Because in a way, you know, he was, you know, I don't want to say he didn't have any injuries or anything like that, but for the most part, he managed his schedule very well. He stayed extreme. He had a great fitness program, so he was able to, and obviously with the efficiency of his tennis, he was able to shorten points and, you know, progress throughout his whole career. But did you feel like 2016 sort of Australian Open, when he gets injured the day after, when he's giving a bath to his kids after the Australian Open, you know, since that time period, it's just been a struggle to keep on coming back, and obviously 4 knee surgeries since. Is it just Father Time and age eventually carrying, you know, catching up to him and without needing any surgery until that period?
Well, absolutely. But I mean, he still won 3 more Grand Slam tournaments after 2016. So
absolutely, yeah.
I think how he came back in 2017 and 18 was quite amazing. And 2019, the Wimbledon final against Djokovic, where he had 2 match points, I think still haunts many Roger fans. Mm-hmm. Of course, you know, I think it's a myth to think that he never had any problems. Even before his first Wimbledon title, I remember it was in the round of 16, if I remember correctly, against Feliciano Lopez.
Yeah, he hurt his back, right?
He hurt his back in the warm-up. He could hardly move. And so he had to get called a physio, I think, after the first game it was, and take some pills. And the back was always a concern for him. Like at 2013, he was really bad. So I think he managed his weak points really well until the whole knee issue came up. And I think that was just not manageable. I mean, it was, as we know now, in the right knee, there was a cartilage damage. So, I mean, there's nothing you can do there. I mean, you can't, it's not like a knee is so complicated. It's not like you can just put in a new joint like with like in your hip, but Andy Murray did. It's just too complicated, and I think he never really found his step again after coming back in last year. So it's a pity. But I mean, watching him not playing professional tennis, I think he will be fine. You know, like his body will be fine. I think he'll be good. He can go skiing. He can play tennis with the girls, with the boys, and hiking and everything. So, I mean, I think that's a very it's nice to know. I think he'll be fine. He just can't really put up with all the stress on his knee, the intensity that caused by a professional tour matches.
Yeah, that makes sense. And of course, he did say that he's going to continue playing tennis and he just won't play professionally on the ATP Tour and the Grand Slams. So do you think, you know, he might go on, if he's healthy enough, and if Laver Cup goes well, obviously, do you think there's a chance that him and his fans can maybe see another farewell sort of exhibition tour that teammate will put on and just can go around and, you know, play some exhibition matches around the world? Is that maybe a possibility or consideration?
Definitely. I'm quite sure we'll see him playing exhibitions in the future. I think he just wants to find out now at the Laver Cup what he's able to do. I doubt he will play a singles match because, I mean, I think it's just too much running and stopping. But I think a doubles match, I think he could sustain.
Mm-hmm.
But I think if the knee is okay, I'm pretty sure he will play some exhibitions, and I think he can still play some decent tennis exhibition wise. I mean, quite sure about that. And as you know, like he's a master at kind of making up events and pleasing people. So I mean, why not? Yeah, I think there will be more than one. I think he kind of hinted at that as well. Like I think he said something like, "I'm going to continue to play tennis, just not on the tour." Mm-hmm. So, which kind of makes you think, "Oh, okay, but maybe like at some other occasions."
Yeah, like that Cape Town match at Africa after Australian Open 2020, he was able to pack 53,000 people almost in a crowd. I mean, he has the power to really do that. Absolutely. Across the world. So.
Absolutely. And I mean, he could do another match for Africa for his foundation. And it's very well, I could very well imagine this to happen.
Yeah, of course. And, you know, just off the court, do you feel like, obviously, you know, his kids are growing up and he has two teenage girls now and two boys as well. And he's quite happy in his life. Do you see anything currently pressing for him in terms of business ventures or anything? Obviously, he has a lot of his sponsors and, you know, brands, and he's doing a lot of work with On. But do you see any other developments there?
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I think all the doors are open for him. I'm quite sure he will take a little bit of time to reflect which direction he wants to go to. I mean, he's already involved in on the footwear company, and I think that will probably grow bigger. His foundation work might take up a little bit more time, like maybe more visits to Southern Africa. And I mean, Team 8 has really been the management company together with Tony Gottsick. I mean, they have some really, really wealthy people behind that. And I could well imagine that he might start to do some managing some players. I think he was quite a bit involved in acquiring players, but he just didn't have the time to really take care of them. I know that Coco Gauff is quite excited about Roger, talking to her even when she was, 15 or so. So I think if he wants to, if he wants teammate to grow, I think he can easily do that just by his charisma, by his knowledge. And I'm quite sure that many players would love to join the company if they can benefit from his knowledge. Plus they have the Labour Cup, which is it will be interesting to see how it will continue without Roger playing. But I mean, if he's a captain, I think he will even fill the stadiums being a captain. I'm not sure about that. So I mean, I think he has so many options, and he knows so many people. It's just on a different level. He knows like Bill Gates. He knows business owners that are like top 10 in terms of in terms of money they have. So I mean, I think anything he would like to do, he can do. I think so. He'll just have to figure out, well, what do I want to do with my time? And I'm quite sure he wants to spend more time with the boys and the girls in maybe the next 2 or 3 years, because I mean, once they're 16, 17, they may prefer to spend their time with their peers and their friends. So I think Roger would like to, having the chance that they're still quite young, I think he really wants to benefit from that.
Yeah, absolutely. So I wanted to ask you, of course, because you've covered him for so long, if there's any, because Roger's been around for so many years, everyone has their own sort of personal story or connection to Roger, in terms of either how they got into the sport or just, meaningful stories or anything like that. Is there any one particular moment in time with him that you remember looking back and think of very fondly, or just, some really great memory, with him, or a conversation? Could be anything.
Yeah. I mean, obviously, I think that one stands out was 2019 when he played the French Open again, and he lost in the semifinals against Rafa Nadal. It was a really windy day. So he went back to Switzerland, and he lives quite nearby where I live. And I went back. And so I think it was Tuesday after the French Open. I was in the indoor swimming pool with my older daughter, who was, I think, 7 at the time. And we'd actually booked a tennis court to play tennis after that. So we just ate a hot dog in the cafeteria, and talking to each other, and then Roger came and said, is this seat free, or is this chair free? And I said, yeah, of course, just take a seat. And he took his two girls to swimming lessons in the indoor swimming pool, actually where I live, like just a few minutes from my home. And so we sat there and just chatted for an hour, and I tried not to be a journalist, you know, like I really tried hard not to ask any journalist questions, you know. So we were just talking about children growing up and education, and about other sports. Like he really loves football or soccer, how you call it in the US. So just like a lot of regular stuff, and of course time was running out, and I was supposed to leave with my daughter to play tennis, but I didn't want to leave, of course, because I wanted to stay and just like savor the moment and talk to him, because it was a different setting. And even though we've met a few times outside of the courts, like it was a good opportunity to just talk with him. And he was asking me questions about my job and the other Swiss players and everything. And then my daughter kind of got bored, and then he sensed that, and then he started to tie her into the conversation and asked her lots of things about, you know, how what she likes to do, how she likes to play tennis, etc. So it was like this. It's what everyone says about him. He's genuinely interested in people, and it was just such a fun hour. Then the two girls came, and they shared one piece of cake, carrot cake, and so it was just a different side. And like in Switzerland, people don't really want to bother Roger. You know, I think that's a big plus. Mm-hmm. If he were somewhere else, people start screaming or want to touch him or whatever. You know, in Switzerland, people are very discreet. So there was a few that came up to him and asked for a selfie, but like really like I'm so sorry, Roger, and I'm really sorry I lost in the semis against Rafa. Could I please take a picture? Mm-hmm. So I think he can just be himself, you know, in Switzerland, and just lead a almost normal life, you know. And it was a fun meeting, and kind of I got to see how he is with his girls, you know, and how he told them no, share the cake, you know, not too. So he kind of, even though he's like a multi and a millionaire, you know, he wants them to have a more or less normal life, you know, grow up in a normal environment, you know, and make them feel just appreciate the things. And I think so that was a really fun meeting.
Yeah, that's extremely memorable.
And then it was 2019, so after that it was like Wimbledon was coming up. Actually, I you know the in Wimbledon there's a tradition that one of the journalists of the winning nations gets to go to the champions dinner.
Oh wow!
And I'd always said no, because I said I just need to work, you know. And we were two of us in 2019 for the finals, because we thought, well, maybe this is the last chance for him to win a Grand Slam tournament, which obviously turned out to be true. So I said, well, I would like to go. So we were kind of talking with the Swiss journalists, and everyone was like, yeah, you've covered Roger for such a long time, just sure. So I you know, you get to dress up before the finals, you know, and they in Wimbledon at the All England Cup, and I was really looking forward to that. Of course, like I wasn't sure if he was going to win, but when he had those two match points, I already saw myself at the champions dinner. Uh-oh. Which obviously didn't happen.
I loved your story after Roland Garros with the swimming pool and all of that. The anecdote with his kids, I think that's just really perfect, because it just shows how much of a people person he is and how genuinely interested he is in other people's lives. I think that really comes across in interviews.
Yeah, and you know, the thing is, I wrote that in that story in Switzerland, you know, not in English. And somehow it got out, you know, and like people outside of Switzerland thought I was just making this up, because it's so, you know, they wouldn't think that could be true, you know. That's I think that's probably unique, you know. In Switzerland, you just live side by side, basically, you know. Like, so that was a fun experience.
Yeah.
More fun than not going to the Champions League.
I think a lot of that, would you say a lot of that comes down to his roots in terms of like the way he was raised and his mom and
yes, yeah, absolutely.
Just
yeah,
the
yeah.
environment he grew up in, a very normal environment. I think he's passing that down to his children, which is great.
Yeah, yeah. And I think you can just, I know Robert a little bit better than Lynette, but he's just a fun guy, you know, like he just makes jokes all the time. And I think you don't really see that side of Roger on the court, because he's very, you know, he's very focused and everything. But he's just a fun guy to be around with, you know. And I remember when I was at the ATP finals at the U2 Arena. I don't remember which year it was. I was having a beer with Robert before Roger's match. We were like outside in the concourse, and everyone was like coming up to him and said, "Oh, Roger's dead," and he just like, he doesn't really love the attention too much, you know. He just wanted to be quiet, have a beer, and take it easy. And so then and there were two or three girls, and he said, "Well, don't come up to me. Go to this guy. He's the godfather of Roger, you know. Like, take pictures with him." And he was pointing to me. And of course, I'm not the godfather of Roger, you know. But and then they were like coming up, but they were like, "Oh, really?" And I was like, no, this is not true, you know. And he was just he was just laughing so hard. I think they're just fun people, you know, to be around.
Yeah, that's an amazing story. Is there anything on the court? Obviously, there's so much to choose from. I mean, 1998 to 2022. But like, is there one match, one title in time that you think, like, you know, that was the epitome of Roger right there? There's so many majors he won. So. Yeah.
Well, I mean, I wasn't in Australia. It was my colleague in 2017. I think that was probably the most memorable match of all time. He's like, and it was kind of like him coming back and him also getting kind of the better of Rafa, who had beaten him so many times in the Grand Slam finals. I think that was probably the perfect scenario for. I mean, when speaking to fans of Roger's, almost everyone mentions that as their favorite memory. I wasn't there, of course. I mean, one thing that really stuck with me was 2009, when he won the French Open for the only time. Because we'd been going to the French Open, and every year he was beaten by Nadal, and it was kind of hopes thrashed. When he finally made it, it was just such a relief, I think, for him, you know, to finally having overcome that hurdle. And he had a really tough time in the matches after Rafa had been beaten by Söderling. But in the finals, he could see the finish line, and he just raced to the finish line. So that was, I think that was quite a special day.
Yeah, absolutely. The 2017 Australian Open for me just totally stands out after 6 months of being off, and the 3-5 setters, and getting the better of Rafa, and the technical improvements, his backhand.
Yeah.
You can go on and on. It's just
the last five games. I mean, it was just you can watch that over and over again.
Of course, I think I pretty much remember every single point pretty much in my head. I've played it over so many times. It's absolutely remarkable. But listen, I would love to keep on chatting with you, but I know you've got a, you know, a busy day ahead still, and you know, you're doing a great job covering Roger so many years. So it was a pleasure having you on, and yeah, you know, I look forward to watching him again at the Labor Cup next weekend, and we'll see how it all unfolds. But he's given us so much, and so much more than personally I ever thought he ever would. So it's been a joy, really, to watch all those years.
Yeah, it's been a really enjoyable journey. I mean, I was so lucky to be there the last 20 years. Just really good timing. And we've completed a book about Roger, which will be out hopefully before Christmas. We were kind of waiting a little bit to see whether he was going to continue to play or not. So, look out for that. I think it's very different.
Interesting. Where can we buy that? Can our listeners?
It will be published in the UK, but I'm sure it will be available worldwide and wide. And I've done it with a British journalist, and we can't really talk about it too much yet, because they haven't started going to the public. But I mean, now I'm kind of looking forward for it to be published quite soon, because I think it will be a fun read.
Yeah, absolutely. Can't wait to read it. And of course, you also published one in 2019, I believe, right? It was called Roger Federer, Phenomenon, Enthusiast, and Philanthropist.
Yeah. Exactly. That was more of not a typical biography, but it was a biography. And I think in English it was 16 chapters. Then I kind of updated it and made it 20 chapters. And this one will be much longer, and really interesting stories with very many people that have been influenced by him along the way. So I'm happy I started that project 2 years ago, when you could sense that his career might come to a close. And so I mean, it's kind of strange to knowing that he won't play anymore, tour matches anymore, but I think we can take we can be, you know, just grateful to having followed that journey.
Yeah, I mean, I'm only 21 years old, so I really don't know another world. I don't know a world without Roger Federer in it. So for me, it's, you know, he's basically gone through school with me. So like, I went to elementary school, middle school, you know, I grew up, went to university, and it was always Roger. Yeah. So it's definitely gone along with so many people. He's been kind of a living calendar in our lives, and it's sad to see him not play anymore on the ATP tour, but also he's given us so many awesome memories, and it's been a really awesome journey. It's been awesome having you, Simon, so thank you so much for your time.
Thanks for the invitation, and still have fun with tennis. I will do that as well, and
Yeah.
All the best with your podcast, following the game.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Yeah. All the best. Thanks. With all of your work. And yeah, we'll talk soon.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.